Rev Meg. That sounds so funny. I hope everyone can hear me. Welcome everybody to our Sunday gathering here in the Awakening Together Sanctuary. It's an honor, a privilege, and total excitement to be here with all of you. So we'll take this moment to greet one another like we would if we were all hanging out, doing it virtually. With our opening song that Dawn's gonna play, and then we'll be back.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart, everybody here. Melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Really good to see where everyone's coming in from. I'm over here on Cape Cod in Massachusetts, and it feels like fall. So right now, the next order of business is to just introduce what our purpose is here. So at Awakening Together, we are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self. Within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols, we seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. And we have five core values, and the one that I chose today is core value number four. I've had a blast this week being handed what I am to talk about, and it was fun to recognize what core value rang true, because they're all so brilliant. So number four is, we affirm one true self as the only truth. We live this value by embracing what is helpful on the path of awakening without idolizing any spiritual doctrine as truth. And we have announcements. As you know, we have regular retreats at the Awakening Together Retreat House in La Vida. Dawn has been announcing the August, September, and fall retreats regularly, so we feel pretty sure that you are well aware of them. However, there is one more retreat at the retreat house that hasn't been announced yet. It is the Freedom from the Ego retreat in December. The purpose of this retreat is to help you become aware of the subconscious ego message that may drive you without knowing it. You see, the way to become free of ego is to first and foremost become aware of its cunning messages. At this retreat, you will learn to see how the ego tricks you into living from its guidance instead of following spiritual intuition. When you leave this retreat, you will see the ego more clearly than you did before. That will provide you with the opportunity to disregard the ego, which is how you free yourself from the ego. Regina will lead this retreat, and each participant will have the opportunity to have a private consultation with Regina, if desired. This retreat will be held at the retreat house from December 9th through the 13th. You can learn more about this retreat and all of our retreats by going to awakening-together.org and clicking Retreats and Classes on the menu bar. From there, look under Retreats at the Retreat House. The second announcement is there is a new program in the sanctuary on Wednesdays at noon Eastern Time. For a half an hour, you can listen to Reverend Billy Sentiris and me, Meg Reinhart, say a lot about nothing. We share a desire for waking our minds up to one truth and have always had a blast reading, bantering, and discussing the process together. From daily experiences to Nisargadatta Maharaj, to the seven steps to awakening and the most direct means of eternal bliss, this half hour is packed with insights and love. Always changing, always nothing, and lots to say about it. Wednesdays at noon here in the sanctuary. Announcement number three. Would you like to meditate with your friends at Awakening Together? If so, join us in the sanctuary at 9 a.m. each Saturday for a full hour of meditation, followed by NTI Circle at 10 a.m. Both of these programs are hosted by Aggie Mitchkoski. And then join us for guided meditation led by Karen Wirth at 9:30 a.m. each Sunday, just prior to our weekly gathering. And the last announcement is Eshwar Sigobind returns to the sanctuary tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. Eshwar was our satsang guest in May. Many of you reflected on teachings from his satsang during your sharing time in the sanctuary, so we know he had an impact on your contemplation. Eshwar is coming back to the sanctuary because he wants to clarify a couple of things from the May satsang. This is a wonderful opportunity to interact with Eshwar and ask any questions that you have. So again, join us for the return of Eshwar Sigobind right here in the sanctuary tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And that concludes the announcements. That's some beautiful stuff. And now I have an opening song that, I hope everyone sinks into because my excitement needs some grounding. And I hope I can feel it with you. So let me share the screen and do all the techie things. All right. That was how I feel. That is how I feel. Oh, what a build up, what beauty. It's art, it's creation, and that feels like God to me, to be moved like that. So now I'll pray for us together. Father, thank you for my love for this wisdom, for bringing me to this moment of feeling such raw inspiration, of being completely moved and led by a different sense. I've loved inviting you in to take over my senses. So again, my favorite thing to talk to is you, to take my thoughts and my words and my feelings and my language and use me. I come here to be used. It's my only desire. And thank you for this great pleasure to know how wonderful it is to say yes, wow, and thank you to this community for being such the wind behind my wings that are trying to fly, and to be on the other side of sharing in this one mind. It's gonna be a blast to hear what we have to say with what you gave me this week, and I'm so excited. Amen. And so without further ado, I mentioned in the announcements that my good friend Billy and I have a little show on Wednesdays, and it is the most exciting and comfortable thing as my debut on here to do the format of where I get most lit up. And on Wednesday, you know, Billy had said something like, oh, I can't wait until we get on here and read Nisargadatta back and forth, like playing the questioner and Maharaj. And I was like, well, that's a great idea. Maybe we'll do it for Sunday. And so that was one of the first plugs of why we're reading number 53 and I Am That. So yeah, we're going to start. Billy's going to be Maharaj, and I'm just going to ask the silly questions.
Hi, everybody. Reverend Billy from I'm going to read from I Am That. 53. Desires fulfilled breed more desires. Desires fulfilled breed more desires. Keeping away from all desires and contentment in what comes by itself is a very fruitful state, a precondition to the state of fullness. Don't distrust its apparent sterility and emptiness. Believe me, it is the satisfaction of desires that breeds misery. Freedom from desires is bliss.
Questioner, I must confess, I came today in a rebellious mood. I got a raw deal at the airline's office. When faced with such situations, everything seems doubtful. Everything seems useless.
This is a very useful mood. Doubting all, refusing all, unwilling to learn through another. It is a fruit of your long sadhana, your spiritual practice. After all, one does not study forever.
Enough of it. It took me nowhere.
Don't say nowhere. It took you where you are now.
It is again the child and its tantrums. I have not moved an inch from where I was.
You began as a child and you'll end as a child. Whatever you have acquired in the meantime, you must lose and start at the beginning.
But the child kicks. When it is unhappy or denied anything, it kicks.
Let it kick. Just look at the kicking. And if you are too afraid of society to kick convincingly, look at that too. I know it is a painful business, but there is no remedy except one. The search for remedies must cease. If you are angry or in pain, separate yourself from anger and pain and watch them. Externalization is the first step to liberation. Step away and look. The physical events will go on happening, but by themselves they have no importance. It is the mind alone that matters. Whatever happens, you cannot kick and scream in an airline office or in a bank. Society does not allow it. If you do not like their ways or not prepared to endure them, don't fly or carry money. Walk. And if you cannot walk, don't travel. If you deal with society, you must accept its ways. For its ways are your ways. Your needs and demands have created them. Your desires are so complex and contradictory. No wonder the society you create is also complex and contradictory.
I do see and admit that the outer chaos is merely a reflection of my own inner disharmony. But what is the remedy?
Don't seek remedies.
Sometimes one is in a state of grace and life is happy and harmonious, but such a state does not last. The mood changes and all goes wrong.
If you could only keep quiet, clear of memories and expectations, you would be able to discern the beautiful pattern of events. It is your restlessness that causes chaos.
For the full 3 hours that I spent in the airline office, I was practicing patience and forbearance. It did not speed up matters.
At least it did not slow them down, as your kicking would have surely done. You want immediate results. We do not dispense magic here. Everybody makes the same mistake. Refusing the means, but wanting the end. Your peace and harmony in the world, but to refuse to have them in yourself. Follow my advice implicitly, and you will not be disappointed. I cannot solve your problem by mere words. You have to act on what I told you and persevere. It is not the right advice that liberates, but the action based on it. Just like a doctor who, after giving the patient an injection, tells him, "Now, keep quiet. Do nothing more. Just keep quiet. I'm telling you, you have got your injection. Now, keep quiet. Just keep quiet. You have nothing else to do." My guru did the same. He would tell me something and then say, "Now, keep quiet. Don't go on ruminating all the time. Stop. Be silent."
I can keep quiet for an hour in the morning, but the day is long and many things happen that throw me out of balance. It's easy to say, "Be silent," but to be silent when all is screaming in me and around me, please tell me how it's done.
All that needs to be can be done in peace and silence. There is no need to get upset.
It is all theory, which does not fit the facts. I'm returning to Europe with nothing to do there. My life is completely empty.
If you just try to keep quiet, all will come. The work, the strength for your work, the right motive. Must you know everything beforehand? Don't be anxious about your future. Be quiet now, and all will fall into place. The unexpected is bound to happen, while the anticipated may never come. Don't tell me you cannot control your nature. You need not control it. Throw it overboard. Have no fight. Have no nature to fight or submit to. No experience will hurt you, provided you don't make it into a habit. Of the entire universe, you are the subtle cause. All is because you are. Grasp this point firmly and deeply, and dwell on it repeatedly. To realize this is absolutely true is liberation.
If I am the seed of my universe, then a rotten seed I am. By the fruit, the seed is known.
What is wrong with your world that you swear at it?
It's all full of pain.
Nature is neither pleasant nor painful. It is all intelligence and beauty. Pain and pleasure are in the mind. Change your scale of values and all will change. Pleasure and pain are mere disturbances of the senses. Treat them equally, and there will be only bliss. And the world is what you make it. By all means, make it happy. Only contentment can make you happy. Desires fulfilled breed more desires. Keep away from all desires. And contentment in what comes by itself is a very fruitful state, a precondition to the state of fullness. Don't distrust its apparent sterility and emptiness. Believe me, it is the satisfaction of desires that breeds misery. Freedom from desires is bliss.
There are things that we need.
What you need will come to you if you do not ask for what you do not need. Yet only a few people reach this state of complete dispassion and detachment. It is a very high state, the very threshold of liberation.
I have been barren for the last 2 years, desolate and empty, and often I was praying for death to come.
Well, with your coming here, events have started rolling. Let things happen as they happen, and they will sort themselves out nicely in the end. You need not strain towards the future. The future will come to you on its own. For some time longer, you will remain sleepwalking, as you do now, bereft of meaning and assurance. But this period will end, and you will find your work both fruitful and easy. There are moments when one feels empty and estranged. Such moments are most desirable, for it means the soul has cast off its moorings and is sailing for distant places. This is detachment. When the old is over and the new has not yet come. If you are afraid, the state may be distressing, but there is really nothing to be afraid of. Remember the instruction. Whatever you come across, you go beyond.
The Buddha's rule, to remember what needs to be remembered. But I find it so difficult to remember the right thing at the right moment. With me, forgetting seems to be the rule.
It is not easy to remember when every situation brings up a storm of desires and fears. Craving, born of memory, is also the destroyer of memory.
How am I to fight desire? There is nothing stronger.
The waters of life are thundering over the rocks of objects. Desirable or hateful, remove the rocks by insight and detachment, and the same waters will flow deep. silent and swift, in their greater volume and with greater power. Don't be theoretical about it. Give it time to thought and consideration. If you desire to be free, do not neglect the nearest step to freedom. It is like climbing the mountain. Not a step can be missed. One step less, and the summit is not reached. Thank you, Megan, for asking me to read.
Ah, thanks for reading. That was packed. It was so hard not to stop and talk about it. And, you know, if I would have prepared for this Sunday the way I thought that I would have, it would have been finding something with such intensity to figure something out and to pick it and to be in this intimacy of just devouring one piece, right? But like, it didn't happen that way. And it's been happiness. Like the process, like I'm like, I can't keep out the process of how all of this came about. My title alone, Window Shopping with Lazy Lazarus. So I have some, I am that, you know, Nisargadatta, who I could just talk about probably the whole sermon. But then I have some biblical references of one of the coolest stories that I just didn't even know about that much, that's not talked about that much. The window shopping with awareness was this thing that happened on Wednesday on our little show, because I was like, you know, my meditator thinks it's awareness. I'm like looking through what I think awareness looks like. And, you know, I'm just starting, like, I'm giggling. I'm in lots of giggles these days about it all. So that happened. So that was one. And I'll tell you this, the Lazarus part. So, you know, that song in the beginning, like, I was a dancer and an artist and I loved poetry growing up, and I always had this intensity to like read about the suffering that like great poets wrote about, right? But there was this beauty of the transitory on the page. And so Sylvia Plath was one of those ladies who was just super intense and stuck her head in an oven and just couldn't stand what the mind did to her. But she wrote some genius stuff. She was tapped in enough. And so I was on the internet reading, like, you know, great poetry that, you know, if you're seeking spirituality, like the top 10 poets you should read. So I come across Sylvia Plath and I was like, oh, my old pal who loves darkness. And her poem was called Lady Lazarus. You know, and she was talking about at 10 years old and 20 years old, and now she's 30. She's trying to just get out of this, right? So I said, you know, later in the day, I was like, Billy, I have to read you this Lady Lazarus poem by Sylvia Plath. And his hearing's interesting, so he heard Lazy Lazarus. And I was like, Lazy Lazarus, you know, and we're like, what, you're getting lazy at dying? Oh, man. So now I'm like, oh, we have to die before we die. And what a great title. And then we're like, waking up, Lazy Lazarus. And then we're like, and then the window shopping with Lazy Lazarus. You know, I'm waking up the meditator who just can't let go of thinking that it knows what truth is. And there's this buildup of intensity for freedom that is exposing how much more intensity I could have for truth, and that the laziness is just like being removed. And So I'm jam-packed with that. So then, you know, there was this Buddhist daily teaching that I get sent by a fellowship I'm in. And it said how, this is my smorgasbord that is all going to tie together. So then I get this reading that says, you know, adults think they have this great power of education and intellect. And what it's used for is really this storage device of memories. And they get mad and have a fight and a disturbance, and they remember how to be mad at somebody. And a child, they're like, rah, rah, you took this, you took that, Johnny. And then 5 minutes later, they're like, hey, do you want some ice cream? Because they have no memory to remember how important we think memory is. And I was like, oh, yes, you know, we have to become like children of God to really enter the kingdom. I shared that again with Billy, and then he reads 53, and I am that, and goes, 53 and I am that. It's all about your children kicking and screaming and not to pay attention. And I said, wow, this is, I got to do it. I'm so moved by my fascination with wanting to be a child, wanting to just not be part of what the world told me that I was supposed to be. Like, it caused so much pain to just have intuition squashed, right? And that my fascination with death or darkness or suffering was the right intention. It was just being used wrong. And everything in between being a child, like Nisargadatta says in here, you know, you're going to start as a child and you're going to end as a child. And just going back to that moment where you didn't know what the world was right away. So where does this go? You know, dying before you die. So in my description, what I said, you know, I've had various experiences of dying before you die. And then it's like, what do you do with what you know now after you've had that hit? And, you know, I've played around with this all my life, but it's gotten more intense lately as I'm, you know, purifying the mind. Is like, when I was born, I was like, healthy baby, 9 months, mom was in labor for 27 hours. They had to, you know, vacuum me out. And I was like, of course I didn't want to come out. So I had a cone head for 2 weeks. But when I popped out, my heart stopped beating for 2 minutes. And I always think like, because I don't know. I mean, as a teenager, I just remember like going, well, no kidding. Who would want to leave what they just came from when they get shocked into being a sensory person? You know, like I started playing with life already. Let's stop the heart. And, you know, I just wonder if like that was an immediate dose of something. And like, I always wonder, because then I, you know, this, when I was 13, I had a head injury and I got hit in the head, playing basketball, knocked out, chipped some vertebrae, was in a halo. But when I was out, I was out. And I remember not being in the deep sleep, but on the waxing and waning parts of being in limbo and almost being suspended. I just remember how wonderful the rest felt, you know, like almost an anesthesia, but like with a little more control and, but then the familiarity of this is me. And after that experience, I was in the beginning stages of polarity. I was in the beginning stages of, I sunk into such a deep depression because the happy that my life was providing was not doing it. Now, I mean, this is hindsight awareness, of course, interpreting what the child was going through, but I became completely addicted to pain because I wanted to explore what it was, you know, and nothing was making me happy. Nothing was making me feel true. and you know, and I had this, I had an obsession with finding out what that was. That was the birth of, like, you know, being thirsty for knowledge and philosophy and, you know, reading Alan Watts and Joseph Campbell and learning about mysticism and the esoteric and human behavior and psychology and all of that, because this was intense that, you know, I started becoming addicted to pain in a way that, like, you know, it was like either starvation or over athleticism or just hurting myself. Like, I know I'm not my body. I know this is not it. And then there'd be some relief and, you know, like, but the Tao says that the root of darkness is the root of bliss. You know, there was something so familiar going on at the same time that I couldn't escape it. And, you know, so, I mean, my story is that I'm an addict and an alcoholic and in recovery. And so I died again when that came to its last stop. It was either I'm going to die or there's God. And that was when you have no choice, you are woken up, shaken up, and everything that you've been trying to do got done for you because you just decided to let it kill you. And then you know, and then you know that you can't know. And then we have Lazarus. So in the Bible, Lazarus dies and is resurrected, right? So I was curious, how did Lazarus feel after you know what you are? Like, I've been gone for 4 days. I was just flying over there. And now I'm, what does the mind do with what it knows when it can't know anymore? Like, you can't, like, so, man. So that is the gist of all the inspiring things of how this crazy thing came about of watching how important it is to die. How do I fall in love with killing my ego? And you know, what is the comfortable relationship to walk up to the thing you fear the most and talk it out of itself? And I can just tell you what's been going on is I've increased my desire for liberation so much that the things that I thought I had to work on are suddenly, like, getting removed in this way that, like, oh, should I watch TV or should I practice? And the question's gone, you know? It's just, it's really exciting. Gosh, man, this week is, so I told you in the beginning, like, you know, I'd be pushing everyone away. I have to study. You don't understand. I mean, there was some of that happening, but, like, this whole buildup of whatever this was going to be, was such a collaborative brotherhood of talking about this. Like, I've been with Billy and his wife Susan, which is a whole other forgiveness story in itself, like nothing short of a miracle, that we just were like little children talking about God for like 4 days straight, doing what we love, completely in service, completely lit up in this happiness of like just talking about what it means to all have a common purpose that is beyond our personalities and our desires, and watching that momentum just carry like our words throughout the day. It's like I was watching the personal disappear and I'm going, oh my God, is this the lightness of being? This is not what I expected awareness to feel like. And I just wanted, I mean, there's so much I want to tell you. It's embarrassing that I just can't, I can't cram it all in, how excited I am. But the purification process of doing the work, of climbing up the mountain and then not missing a step, and what Nisargadatta says. Learning about myself to know that it shouldn't be the self. It looks really messy sometimes. You know, if I were to go out into the world and tell anyone my scenario of what my beautiful classroom is of waking up, they would look at me and go, how is that spiritual? You know? And I'm so grateful I'm in a place where sharing is just exploding, because the personal is like, I'm just at that place now where the personal is crossing over the line of being universal, and like nothing that I am explaining has to do with me at all, but it needs to have its openness and its platform. And so what's been happening is like, you know, I started this spiritual process five years ago. It was, you know, in recovery. You know, I could not stop until I was like, I'm going to die. And I let the death thing kind of happen. Grace happened. I said, you know, Billy helped me and was like, how did you stop drinking? And I said, I don't know. And he said, good, get to know that. And then right away it was like, you know, Billy put on NTI in his car because I just talked and smelled a lot, and he put on NTI Luke, and I was just, I started to hear the truth. And I can literally say that I've grown up in this room. And the acceleration and the intensity of whatever obsession and addiction was went right towards truth and learning how to take my mind and to dismiss it. And, you know, having an attitude that my body is not myself. And so the purifying of the mind, the constantly seeing like, okay, this is split. I know that black needs to go with white and white needs to go with black. And I know at the root of that, I feel really bad about myself and I know I shouldn't believe it. And then this is mental mind training of just training my mind to think spiritually. Oh, it's been fun, but it's also been like, do I get to throw out the book yet? Like, and so, you know, and you have these moments, these temporary states of liberation. Ah, and you think you got it, and then your mind holds on to it. And then it gets an idea of what liberation means. And then you're back, and you're removing. And it's just like, I feel like I'm looking at awareness, watching awareness. I feel it. And still there's more stuff to be removed, right? And then I increased, you know, I'm reading Michael Langford a lot. And I increased my intensity and had this familiarity of like, wait a minute, I've already thought about something in an obsessive mode and an addictive mode for a long time now. I got the tools. Oh, like, I have the tool to be an addict. And then I was like, Jesus must have been an addict. Like, he was like, brothers, we are no different. I just think of my father all the time. And I was like, cha-ching, that's it. So increase. So this was the magic that happened, was like, I wanted to fire the Holy Spirit. I'm getting rid of the father. I'm getting rid of, I was like, I don't want to be a discerner anymore. Like, I don't even like discerning anymore. Like, it, that makes me feel bad. I was just like, my spiritual toolbox now has the pleasure and pain sensory buttons. And I was just like, enough already. And I got to this new state of pain where I was like, I just got to go for it, right? And so, you know, I start dedicating like these 2 hour, as many hours as I can of awareness, watching awareness. And like, I'm so excited to tell you guys, it's don't stop looking at it. Don't ever stop looking at it. That when the penetration, you know, so I see why there's so many books written about the steps and what it looks like to go to awareness and like the layers of the brain, because I swear to you, when you start, your head starts getting washed, you know, with like really pure water, it's just like you get this map of where, how it was unfolding. It was visual for me, and it meant nothing, but I see how you want to tell people what it looks like. Like, go buy that clothing, you know, and you got all these people walking by the window going, that looks like a good piece of awareness garment. Sure, I'll buy that one, you know. So, but all right, so what happened was like, I was like, jeez, like consciousness completely stripped down to its bare essentials. Without the thinker and without being flooded with awareness, like if it was just its consciousness, right? The mind, it's just a focusing mechanism. It's just, it's almost like 2 clocks over to the left and we can be the ego, and over here and we can look at awareness. And when I saw the ability to just be in so much control of that focuser, the pause, the distance from being a thinker was longer than ever. It was just, there was a long, like time was used so properly in that moment, because I was like, I can decide to have pain and pleasure. And it, you know, what a gift to watch the earnestness build up. There's no remedy. There's no remedy except to look. And to focus, to not give up, and then to be completely doused in no mind for as long as possible. There are things that our mind hides from ourselves that we are not able to see when we're in the mind. That when we get out of it, it just lights up these corners that you're just like, how was I keeping that from myself? What? And then the other fun thing is that if I'm not too interested in becoming a knower again, or I'm in this real subtle cause of being a knower, I have this moment of, I can take it seriously and go do a root cause on it and really see how I hate myself. Or I just laugh about it. And I had the option to laugh about it, you know? What? I had the option to laugh at the tiny mad idea. So, oh, it's so funny that I wrote like pages this morning. Nothing. It's all gone. It's all gone. It just, it had to come out, you know? I had, no, I did have a Seven Steps to Awakening that tied in, you know, to 6:15, to know that you are a prisoner of your mind, that you live in an imaginary world of your own creation is the dawn of wisdom. And that knowing has layers of knowing, and it can't wait to become insight, you know? And I'm just keep massaging the knower, because in Nisargadatta's, what we read, there was this one line that three of us were going over, and I can't believe I'm coming back to it. It was saying that craving, born of memory, is also the destroyer of memory. And Nisargadatta threw Buddha under the bus. And was, because the questioner was like, Buddha's rule was to remember what needs to be remembered. Which means, like, I have to remember I'm the child of God. I have to remember that I'm always perfect. I have to remember that this is good for me. And I'm like, I'm tired of remembering. And I see that even the one memory I'm supposed to remember is going to destroy my memory. Like, I have to pickle my memory. And when I say pickle, I think Billy said this last time. When, like, if you're a drunk like me, we saturated ourselves so much, like a cucumber in vinegar. Like, a cucumber can never go back to being a cucumber after it's been pickled. And there's a beauty in being pickled, is that you get to that no choice, where you destroy what you're craving. Like, you killed your craving by wanting it so much. And you know, but I'll say this, you know, I said this from the beginning, like, is there any way that I don't have to go to that extreme sufferer anytime, because I don't know if my heart can handle it? Like, have I done enough suffering for one lifetime? Like, even my happy ideas are still bringing suffering, and that is just a crappy deal. You know, I just remember being so upset with life, and that I just never knew that my desire to just want life to end was going to give me such a proper tool to just end it the right way. Oh, thanks for that, God. That was fun. Because after all, I mean, you know, Mary and Martha were Jesus's, or were Lazarus's, they were brothers and sisters. And Mary and Martha in the Bible were like, Jesus, you have to come save Lazarus. Like, he's the one you love, and he's sick, and you have to come. And Jesus didn't, it was just like, he was just moved by his own information, right? Not the minds that wanted him to perform the miracles they knew he could do. And he waited for 2 days in Bethany, maybe, because he was away from the other town where the Jews wanted to stone him, and that's where Lazarus was. But anyway, he, like, hung out for 2 days, got the information of whatever, like, just enough information to know what not to do, right? Not really being exposed to what was going to happen. And then he got to the town, and Martha's already at the edge of town before he even can get in to get his hotel, you know? And he was just like, and Martha's like, Jesus, like, you got to get in here. Like, he's dying. And Jesus is like, I know, Martha. And then Mary comes in, and Mary was the one who put the perfume on his feet at the very beginning. And Mary was like the calm one, going like, oh, Jesus, you could have saved him. He's dying. Like, you could have saved him, and he died, you know, and he's Jesus is just saying, you got to be patient for the glory of God. You got to be patient. You have no idea why I'm supposed to wait. I have no idea why I'm supposed to wait. And then, like, you know, and then it's like 3-4 days later, and he's like, all right, take me to the tomb. And like Mary and Martha are crying, and then that in the Bible is where it's like Jesus wept. Like, he felt his humanity, because like he had to make a decision that his humanness was like, I know I can save this man. I'm being held back. For what reason? Why am I being held back from saving my friend? And then he goes into the tomb and he's like, wake up, Lazarus. And then like he comes out, he says, you know, unwrap him. And that was the resurrection. And he had to show that the light was within, that it wasn't the body. There had to be an example that you're always alive, even when your body dies. In the same Bible, in John, the importance of this death is that the Son of Man has to be glorified. The Son of Man has to die in order to be eternal life. And the other part in John that emphasizes how important death is, and that you will not die. And if you let yourself die in this body, watch yourself be born. I tell you that unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains a single grain of wheat. But if it does, it brings a good harvest. The man who loves his own life will destroy it. And the man who hates his life in this world will preserve it for eternal life. If a man wants to enter my service, he must follow my way. And where I am, my servant will also be. And my Father will honor every man who enters my service. The man who hates his life in this world will preserve it for the false idea that it's survive, you know? And that's what we're ending, is this false life preservation, you know, and to find the courage to completely turn your mind upside down and empty it as much as possible, because you get what you need when you don't ask for what you do not need. You do not know what you need. So don't ask for it. And it will come. And I just want to fill the room with excitement that nothing is so fruitful. And to really speed up the death and to eliminate the fear that comes with what the mind brings when you're doing it is that taste in no mind. Like, to desire the cosmic mind that Jesus had is the only worthwhile thing that I want. And every obstacle starts to disappear when you intensify that desire and you decide to walk up that mountain, man. The relief, and then the depth and power of who you truly are, sinking into all the crevices where your false beliefs were. It's just, I hope everyone wants to taste it, you know. And I'm going to cut myself off because I have to. But it has been just so much fun to be on this side of like, wow, what just happened? And I guess I'll play a song that's going to inspire us to meditate and talk about it. All right. Yay. Thank you so much for listening and being here. I'm going to share my screen and get out of the way.
Scars that can't be seen. I've got drama, can't be stolen. Everybody knows me now. I've got nothing left to lose. I'm so high it makes my brain whirl. Drop my cell phone down below. Just like me, by the time I got to New York, I was living like a king. Then I used up.
I'm still on, aren't I? There we go. All right, so also, if you would like to donate to Awakening Together, now is a great time to visit awakening-together.org/donate. Yeah, right now it's a time to share contemplations. You know, one more thing I wanted to add was, like, Lazarus was awakened, you know. And what did he do with all of that in between time? 30 years, it's said by tradition, he didn't really smile that much because like people didn't really like that what he knew. And that's almost what this process feels like, is like we know something and we didn't know what to do with about it, but we have this space to keep learning and to pop out and smile about it. So anyway, this space is for you. Go ahead and take the mic if you want. Go ahead, Regina.
Well, the funny thing is that I don't really want to say anything because I don't want to tamper with what you said. I think it was brilliant. I think it was perfectly said. And I just want to say thank you for releasing the mic.
Thank you, Regina. Thank you. You lead by one of my favorite examples of how to do it.
A lot to say about nothing.
All right.
Well, as I say, maybe that's what I want to say, is that I just want to remind everybody that that you two, Meg and Billy, are on now on Wednesdays at noon Eastern time, which unfortunately is 10 a.m. Mountain time, and I'm often still in my own meditation contemplation time, which is why you... You know, if I come out in time, I'll be there. But sometimes I don't know it's that time. I'm not paying attention to time yet. But for everyone who is available, then I do want to say that you can hear the two of them every Wednesday, noon Eastern time. And maybe now that you've gotten a little taste of both, you'll be encouraged to show up. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Well, I didn't play my last song, but it's time for Dawn to take over, and we'll go into our fellowship. So thank you again. I'll see you all soon.